Hello and welcome back to Reality TV. I have a little mix today of shows. I'll be talking a little bit about Married at First Sight, not as much as previous weeks, and I'll tell you why when I start talking about it. Of course, I'm going to be talking about Sister Wives and 90 Day Fiancé because Sunday nights on TLC are, I want to say lit, but that doesn't seem to be the popular phrase. They're just pretty damn good. I feel extra cheerful today. I'm sure you hear it in my voice because not only is the sun shining here in Chicago, it's starting to feel like spring, but my husband had to go into the office. I know, I don't want to brag about it, but I'm feeling pretty damn good. I'm feeling alive. I'm feeling more like myself. I have a little breathing room. I don't hear him doing conference calls in the background. You probably don't hear him doing his conference calls in the background. I know for the last year, if you listen very carefully, you'll hear him. And I love him to death. I love him dearly. But a little extra space does a Jody good. I'm feeling really good today. I'm going to love him so much more when he gets back. Anyhow, I have a real bone to pick with TLC. What happened with Seeking Sister Wife? It was on the lineup. It had a commercial with a premiere date and everything that was supposed to be the 28th, but it's disappeared. It's not on the lineup. There doesn't seem to be a trailer anymore. The only thing I see that seems to be new episodes is a show called My Feet Are Killing Me. You can fuck off with that. We already have Dr. Pimple Popper coming on at every inopportune moment, just reminding us how gross our bodies are. So I don't know what's going on with that. I'm a little fearful that something bad has happened or there's some sort of scandal because they may just pull it off the air, which is horrible for us because then we're missing out on something pretty damn good. Now, there is a special place in my heart for Seeking Sister Wife, not because of the Snowdens, who, much like My Feet Are Killing Me, can fuck right off because they were the worst. But remember Bernie and Paige McGee? Those of you who have been listening since the beginning, oh my gosh, I think I'm going on 3.5 years of podcasting here. I did a little digging into the sister wife culture, and I had signed up under an anonymous name and no picture, whatever, on this sister wife, Seeking Sister Wife app, I guess you would call it. God, I sound so old. Whatever. This website where basically Tariq and Hazel were looking, people who are looking to have a third in their marriage, but it was more religiously slanted. It wasn't necessarily like a hookup thing. Well, before we even knew about this show, Seeking Sister Wife, I know for a fact they weren't even filming. I had matched with Bernie and Paige McGee. Yeah, I think I still have the original photo. I took a little screenshot. And then, surprise, surprise, like 6 or 8 months later, they're on the freaking show. And I was like, holy shit, that was my almost husband and almost wife, if I were actually serious about it and not, you know, married with 2 kids in the suburbs. But anyway, I'm very upset about this. I feel like we are at least owed an explanation, especially if I am paying for this Discovery Plus channel. And I have a little bone to pick because I am not impressed at all with the offerings on this damn thing. The only episode that you can get early that I know of, or at least that's worth watching, is Sister Wives. And you can watch that on the TLC website or the TLC app. They don't put 90 Day Fiancé up there early, which would be a huge draw. Wouldn't you sign up for that? No commercials. You would go from a 2-hour episode to, I think, 86 minutes is what it gets cut down to. There are no Pillow Talk episodes for this current season of 90 Day Fiancé. There are Pillow Talk episodes, though, for the 90 Day journey thus far in that new one with the Fernanda dating, Big Ed dating. So it's clever of them because if you like the Pillow Talk episodes, which I do, only because I really enjoy Tim and Veronica. Tim is actually pretty damn funny. He was weird on the show, but he's really funny. But anyway, they're clever because if you like Pillow Talk, you're going to end up watching the stupid other shows that they have on there, but I'm not buying it. I am not watching that shit. And then I watched a Bears All episode. Not impressed. The only reason I watched it was because, actually, my daughter wanted to watch it because it had Colt and Debbie on there. And let me just tell you, if there were any doubt in your mind that Debbie was not a monster, wait till you hear this. Sean asks her about her dating life, and she said she had lots of one-night stands. And she also claimed she was a go-go dancer. And her boldest claim is that she slept with the Marlboro man. I can never say that word, but yeah, the billboard the cigarette guy. She claims she slept with him. So Sean showed her a picture and she's like, I think that could have been him, but I don't totally remember. Okay, sure, Jan. But most disgusting of all is this cocktail Colt and Debbie drink, and Debbie calls it the Dirty Debbie. She went in the kitchen and she took out a big, I guess, stein or a beer mug, but a huge one, probably holds like 28 ounces or so. You know what I'm talking about? Those huge, heavy ones that you get at a restaurant. So in this cocktail, she puts amaretto and she counts to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 with amaretto. The same thing with coconut rum. Oh, there's more. The same count with banana rum. And then she took a gallon of whole milk, you guys, and poured it to the top. So it was like 80% milk, the rest of it liquor. And then she drinks it with a straw. Her and Colty are sitting there drinking this thing up. Is that not the most foul thing you have ever seen or heard? Wouldn't that just curdle the alcohol in the milk? But no, they're just chugging away. Ugh, no wonder Colt has such a bodacious bod when he's drinking those cocktails, probably several of them on a Thursday night with his mom. Okay, well, speaking of Thursdays, Amanda and I are going to be releasing quite a few Patreon episodes this week. So very quick rundown. On Thursday, we are going to be recording an episode for Total Request Podcast. This was a requested show, BoJack Horseman. And at the tier two level, we will be recapping Fargo, which is on Netflix, season 2, episode 1. And then on We Love to Hate TV, Amanda is releasing her final chapter of Matt Bayer's memoir. And we have cooked up something special for you at tier 2 on We Love to Hate TV. And I have to speak in code here because this super secret top level clearance episode, it's close to home. You know, Tanya and Carol on Teen Mom, when they became mothers-in-law, they definitely had some conflicts with their son and daughters-in-law, right? So that's what we'll be talking about. We'll just call it Tanya and Carol. Read between the lines. Okay, let's talk about other people's marriages in Married at First Sight. Chris and Paige. They are basically a gift that was given to us this season because they're carrying the show at this point. I hate to say it because Paige's life has been made pretty much a living hell, whether she realizes it or not. But all these other couples, I'm totally bored by. I had my laptop in front of me ready to take my notes like I always am. And I had nothing to write down for Clara and Ryan, nor Virginia, Brianna, and Vincent. Haley and Jacob, it's interesting because they're not getting along, but it's not like, let's say, a Jamie and Beth, where their arguments are even interesting or fun or cringy to watch. They're just not a compatible match. Haley is not that into Jacob, and Jacob is a dork. He's got a weird personality. He's just weird. And what does he want her to say? She's pretty much throwing it out there saying, I don't get the 80s thing. Meaning, I don't get you. Not the 80s are weird. You're weird. Jake's got no personality. I don't understand that match at all. I don't know why they matched him up. Maybe physically they look like a normal, cute-ish couple. Although I think Jake's face, like I said, looks like he is the eldest Gronk brother that fell straight on his face and fell back into the 80s. But really, none of these couples I care about. But I do really not necessarily care about them. I just really enjoy watching this whole Chris and Paige thing. So that's what I'm talking about today. If you really like Married at First Sight and you're looking for more details on all the other couples, I guess stay tuned. And if something interesting happens, I'll talk about them. But let me know if there's another great podcast that covers Married at First Sight, because I'll definitely listen to it. Share the love. Let's talk about it. But for now, let's talk about Chris and Paige. Chris would not allow cameras to record the conversation that he was having with Paige in their apartment. I wonder why. Would it be because it's going to show him for the actual person that he is? All this secrecy, this, oh, cut your mic, I'm whispering in your ear. I don't know why that works for Paige, and she thinks that it's okay to do that, that it's normal. But it's not, and it's also confirming what we all know. He's a fraud. He doesn't mean anything he says. He doesn't do anything he says. He's just an all-out fraud. And I did have one of my listeners, Nicole, she had posted in my Facebook group, Reality TV Orchard of Snark. You can go and take a look at it. Chris was a franchise owner of Subway, and Nicole linked this article about Chris getting evicted basically from this Subway, and there was like personal shit outside the place. You can go and dig into it. I personally like to live in the moment and watch the show as it's happening. And then towards the end of the season, I like to find out spoilers if I can help it. That is, with Chris, it's kind of hard because everyone knows this guy's a piece of shit and he's a liar. So all these things are coming up. I'm living for it though, because I'm an asshole. So here we are. He's talking with Paige. They cut the mics out. And then we have Paige calling someone from production saying Chris told her he wants a divorce. He's still in love with his ex. He's already talked with a divorce attorney. He just wants to part ways at this point. Obviously, he doesn't even want to be filmed because he's probably told his ex slash current fiance, because now he's back together with her, he's probably told her a totally different story. And if he did tell her that he was going to talk with Paige, he probably twisted into something completely different. And he doesn't want to have any receipts. He doesn't want to have a little trail of clues for either or any of the women. There could be more than two. I'm sure there are more than two or three. He doesn't want anyone to be able to put all the pieces together. So who do we call in a time like this? A Pastor Cal. He comes in, sits down, and right away I wanted to punch him in the frickin' face. More than I want to punch Chris, actually. Because Pastor Cal starts looking Paige up and down, telling her she looks good. Real good. No, I mean it. You look real good. Okay, weirdo. Aren't you a pastor? Which he reminds us about later when he's like, oh, I can't say BS because I'm a pastor. Oh, but you can look up a 26-year-old up and down and keep giving her compliments like that. If it were Dr. Pepper, if it were any other man on earth besides him or Chris, I wouldn't think twice about it. But I just hate Pastor Cal. Now, before Chris gets there, he wants to talk with Paige about what Chris has told her. He apparently has not heard anything from anyone. Great. I'm so glad we have experts to help the couples out when they don't freaking know anything. And I don't think Pastor Cal is that great of an actor for him to have acted surprised later. I really think it was just production that knew this shit and they hadn't filled in Pepper or what's her name? Viviana. Yeah, where the hell is Viviana, by the way? Viviana would have read him the riot act. Although Pastor Cal did a little bit. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself here. I'm sorry. I'm very excited and very excitable about this show. Reeling in, Jody. Okay. Paige claims that Chris said he wanted to have sex with her on their wedding night, even though she wasn't really too fond of the idea because she didn't get a great feeling from him during the reception, which we all can vouch for. I remember that clear as day. But he told her he was feeling kind of disconnected. She said the same thing. So he was like, you know what? We need to have sex. That's how we are going to come together. I need to feel closer to you. And by close, I mean, I'm going to fuck you every day And then I'm going to tell you that I'm not attracted to you. So she tells Pastor Cal this whole story. And that's when Pastor Cal says, well, that's BS. Oh, I mean, I can't say that because I'm a pastor, but that's BS. Well, obviously you can say it. And BS is not a swear word. It's short for something. And how is that any bad thing to say? What? Again, this is why I hate Pastor Cal. So now Chris comes in and Pastor Cal just looks him up and down like he's Chris's dad, giving a disapproving look. You know when that would have come in handy? Cal, at their wedding or during the honeymoon. You could have FaceTimed, you could have Zoomed, you could have given him a phone call, but where were you? Probably shopping for some new little snazzy cat socks. Oh, by the way, that was really a sweet moment when Paige had to tell Pastor Cal about her period schedule and then he shamed her about not having protected sex. Can you not talk to a woman about that? They should have had Viviana and Pepper there, although Chris seems like the type of guy who would be like, I'm not going to let a woman tell me anything, but he would listen to Pastor Cal thinking he can pull one over on him because he too prays. I'm going to need to say a prayer here in a moment. So based on the fact that we know Chris told Paige, you know, off the record, I'm just letting you know that the mother of my child and I are going to move forward. She's still in love with me. I still love her. So we're going to make it work. Pastor Cal asks Chris, well, if you knew that, if you knew you were still in love with her and you knew you weren't attracted to Paige, then why did you sleep with her numerous times? If you weren't attracted to her, if any of this were true that you told Paige, why did you keep sleeping with her? And Chris goes, no, well, it wasn't like that. I don't want to talk about it because it's not like that. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Well, screw you. You're going to stay in this room with Pastor Cal. That should be punishment enough. That would be my form of torture. Put me in a room with Pastor Cal, him insisting I tell him something. I'd spill my deepest, darkest secrets in front of that man just to get out of the room. But they let Chris get off with it. I mean, Pastor Cal gave him a little bit of a tongue lashing, but not as harsh as I would have liked to see. And then Pastor Cal gives only Paige a hug and he leaves. And then Chris does the most insincere apology ever. I'm sorry for everything. I just hope you don't hate me. No, that is not an apology. That's a, oh, I'm a victim. Poor me. I know I did something really bad, but I hope you can forgive me. Once again, I blame his parents for this because he probably did that stupid puppy dog look with his stupid, dumb face that he looks like he's an alien fetus. He's not attractive at all. I don't know how he's sleeping with all these women. And then Paige says nothing and just kind of sits there like, So he leans forward and whispers something in her ear. Let me just ask you this question. If Chris would have done all this shit to you and then he would lean forward, whether to kiss you or whisper something in your ear, would you just sit there? Wouldn't you lean back away from him and be like, what are you doing? Especially if a camera is there to catch it all. But no, Paige just sits there and lets him whisper it. And she gets a little smile on her face and she gets a little giggly. And then she tells us later that he whispered in her ear, my fear is that I could fall in love with you. And now she's all confused. You guys, she's freaking buying it. She really believes he's fearful of falling in love with her. That's why he's doing this, because he's just afraid of how deep he can love. Wake the fuck up, Paige. And then when she's waiting around in the parking lot and she's just staring at him, he's got his suitcases rolling away from her. And she's like, so you're telling me there's a chance? No, girl. Actions speak louder than words. He's rolling his ass away. And you're standing there turning around and saying, well, I guess I'll walk away now. She's walking sideways. She's galloping sideways away from him while watching him. At this point, I don't feel bad for the girl. She should have left that first day into their honeymoon. She's sticking around for it. She is a glutton for punishment, and she's begging for it at this point if she ever speaks to him again. Now, next week, I know it said that Chris is going to call for a sit-down between his ex or current, whatever the hell you want to call her, his baby mama and Paige, and they're all going to sit down together. I'm going to predict that this is something his ex wanted because his ex wanted a timeline or Paige wanted a timeline. If this is Chris calling a summit of everyone, then he truly is a different level of sociopath than I predicted. He's probably getting off on the fact that he's got two women here that are fighting over his love and affection. Are you guys seeing something that these women are seeing that I'm not? Because I don't think he is in any way attractive. If I had to choose between, let's think, a 90 Day Fiancé Ryan, who I think is just, ugh, he's so balls ugly, or Chris, I would actually say Ryan. There's just something about Chris's face that he doesn't look fully developed. He looks like an underdeveloped fetal, like a fetal alien. That's all I'm seeing. Or, like I said, just not a fully evolved Homo sapien. Just seriously, please let me know, because no one has told me, Jody, you're way off base and he's super hot. Nor have I heard anyone say, yeah, you're right on, he's super ugly. Please let me know. Validate me in some way. Make my day even sunnier than it is right now by telling me what a horribly ugly person Chris is inside and out. Okay, let's go to 90 Day Fiancé because, you know, I love keeping my things in order here. We're going in chronological order of the week. 90 Day Fiancé. Surprisingly, Mike and Natalie left a lot to wonder about. Maybe it was just me because I was watching this episode for the first time in quite a few weeks with Dave, and I was trying to fill in the gaps with him, like, okay, you got to watch this, and she did this, and she gave the ring back, and all that kind of stuff. And I was wanting him to get excited to hate Natalie with me, but then they just kind of did boring shit. Like, Natalie's calling her a friend, complaining about the ring again. And then they were talking outside, just Mike and Natalie. And I didn't really catch on to anything, probably because I was explaining he's 7 feet tall. And then we got into this whole thing, how tall should she be then? Because she doesn't look that much shorter, blah, blah, blah. It was just really boring. But from a male's perspective, Dave's like, you could tell she's totally crazy. He probably thought she was super hot, but now he's just in this deep and he's probably going to marry her, which I think we found out, spoiler, but he seems to think any guy would see her and know that she's batshit crazy. That's all we really got from them. Maybe I missed something big. If I did, let me know, but I'm going to move on to Brandon and Julia because I'm going there with that fucking lasagna that she made. Now, first of all, Betty is making this lasagna in the kitchen on this table that is also a TV stand. Like, there was a flat screen TV on that table, which makes no sense to me because if you're sitting at the table and the screen is right there next to your elbow, you're not really watching it. It was just fucking bizarre. So I hated that right off the bat. And then Betty did the thing I hate the most. She turns into Giada when she's making a lasagna and she's like, oh, this is the ricotta cheese. Have you ever had this, Julia? Maybe she had ricotta cheese if you said it normally, like not a native Sicilian. But here we have Betty trying to rub it in that she knows what a prosciutto is. Asshole. Second of all, or third, I don't know where I'm at in the list of things that I hate about Betty, but the fact that she's just whipping this thing together right next to the trash can where all the cockroaches are, no one wants to eat that freaking lasagna made in that kitchen with those hands that you've been dipping into the hot tub and or another couple, allegedly. And then we see the final product, which they carry outside on a chilly day. So I'm sure that cold, thick layer of cheese on top was just delicious to gnaw through. That thing looked like a brick, a red brick on an old 1970s, 80s home. That was a bizarre shade. And I love a cheesy top, but that top was like reddish, yellow, like she might have mixed the sauce together with the cheese and then poured it on top. And I love a crispy cheese edge, but that did not look right. And my God, the speed and the amount that they ate of that thing. That was a huge serving. That looked bigger than a 9x13. dare I say, it was like a 10 by 14 or bigger. The thing was freaking huge and deep, and that inch thick cheese, whatever the hell that was on top, that was nearly half gone by the time that they were done eating. If you notice Julia's plate, let's just say she maybe picked through some of that ricotta. Maybe she's bringing it over to her pigs, who are her new best friends, while she's shoveling up their shit tonight. She'll give them a little extra treat. And Brandon's, too, is kind of picked through. So that means Ron and Betty fucking put their face into that thing like it was a pig trough. Then it gets to maybe something I may talk about in an episode with Amanda this week. They start talking about wedding dresses. Betty invites herself. Can you imagine being so bold? Like, she assumed she was the one who was going with Julia, that it wasn't just going to be Brandon and Julia. She was like, oh yeah, dress shopping, cool. I can't wait to go. No, you don't get to go just because you don't have any daughters. That's not Julia's problem. You get to go do whatever the grooms do with their moms. But here she is like, well, I'm not a stranger. I can go. Well, you may not be a stranger, but you're a bitch, bitch. You're not invited. This isn't about you, Betty. Now, I know for a fact I'm projecting some issues here, but even being told, keep your mouth shut, she could not help herself. She just had to make sure that Brandon knew what her opinion was. And as soon as Julia left wearing whatever dress it was, one or two, she turns to Brandon. She's like, well, what do you think? You liked that one? Really? You liked that one? Well, I mean, she just does have a different style, I guess. Shut the fuck up. This is literally the one time in Julia's lifetime that she should have without you in it. It was hard enough for her to have her mom just there on FaceTime, but now she's got to share it with you and keep a smile on her face and not be able to express whatever emotion she was having in that moment because Betty's freaking face is sitting there smiling, making it about her. I can't wait for a tell-all or a reunion, and I hope to God Sean reads some viewer questions or tweets, or maybe they do that weird tweet back show, answer back, bark back, or whatever, because that bitch needs to answer to all of us. Now let's move on to, let's talk about Rebecca and Ziad here. You want to take tour for Mary soon? Why is Rebecca speaking in broken English to Ziad all the time now? I don't remember her doing this at all when she went to visit him in Tunisia. I noticed it maybe once or twice earlier this season, but now it's become a regular thing and it's creeping me out because it's turning into what I imagine she does, like baby voice to him, like touch there. Oh, move down more. I don't know. It's just so gross to me. You touch animal. You like smell. I like smell horse. Okay, first of all, weird. I've never heard anyone say I love the smell of horses because as far as I know, they just smell like farm and zoo animal. It just smells like skunky shit. But of course, you know what? Maybe that's why she always says that she likes how Ziad smells. Doesn't he smell good? Doesn't he smell good? Because I, too, imagine Ziad smelling like farmer zoo animal, smelling like skunky shit. If you're wearing a tight wool sweater or a tight sweatshirt like that, it's going to get funky under a guy's hairy armpit. No doubt about it. He's got a very musky BO. But let's talk about this wedding venue. So she took off work. They go to this wherever 80s jacuzzi, like a Sybaris sort of place. Are those nationwide where you rent the room and there's like pools and stuff? It's basically rent by the hour, have sex in a pool place. That's what this place looked like. A little more upscale, but that brown edge jacuzzi brought it down to, I'd say, like a 3.5-star rating on TripAdvisor. But jacuzzi aside, or actually, that's a great point. Jacuzzi is the same in his Tunisian tongue than it is in English. And that should be a perfect place where they can come together and they can start speaking about things in more than one or two words. And I'm blaming mostly Rebecca on that because Ziad's English is pretty good. He's not speaking in broken sentences like she is. They obviously do not talk that much about anything besides what are we going to order on Vistaprint. She has no idea. He does not want to get married during Ramadan. And I blame both of them for that, not just Rebecca. How does neither of them look up a calendar, even if he found out that he was leaving 2 weeks out? My basic calendar on my iPhone right now has Ramadan in there. I don't know exactly what the holiday is about, but if I were marrying a devout Muslim man, that's something I would think about. That's something that Rebecca would be like, oh, what's Ramadan? Isn't this the second guy that she's, second guy that she's married that's been Muslim? She should know that much. So I blame both of them. Obviously, they're not talking about anything of depth. Marriage, kids, religion. Those are the three biggest things I think would come up within 2-3 months of serious dating. I think as deep as they've gotten with each other, the most they've learned about each other was in that exchange with the frickin' horse. I like horse smell so much. Jesus. Okay, Yara and Jovi. God, Jovi is such a bitch to all of us. This whole situation sucks. Yara is stuck with this friggin' dork who looks like a mix between a platypus and an alligator with the tail of an egret. And the only reason for any of this, for her still being in New Orleans and on the show, is because she's pregnant with his fetus. A fetus that we know is going to be born with a full set of teeth that's going to gnaw its way out of Yara's poor vagine. She needs to hightail it back to Ukraine, find herself even a mediocre-looking sugar daddy, and be perfectly happy. Shame on both of these idiots for thinking real life was going to be anything like their all-inclusive vacations. At this point, they got to cut their losses, and if that means Yara moves back to Ukraine with her family and raises this baby on her own, or she chooses to place the baby for adoption, abortion, whatever she wants to do, this is not going to end well. This is not going to be a happy life for anyone involved. Ugh. You guys, what are we going to do about Yara? Think about when we first saw her coming down that escalator, minus the weird ombre hair. Such pride and confidence, never thinking, and we never thought, she'd ever be caught dead on camera looking less than ready for the club. Perfect hair, perfect makeup, even if it were 10 a.m. in the morning. And now we see her crying, sans makeup, and I think I saw some chipped nails. I know. Who is going to want to come to America when we do this to even the most beautiful creatures on earth? Between Julia and, I was almost going to say Natalie, but karma's taking care of that one. But seriously, when you look at Yara and you know that, 4 weeks in America has done that to her? Yikes. What does that say for the rest of us? So let's jump ahead to Jovi's parents in the kitchen. They're pretending like Yara and this whole pregnancy, everything is just great for all of 5 minutes. And clearly, they are seeing what we see in terms of compatibility. But then they start going in on Yara wanting to elope to Vegas. And my feelings of being like, yeah, you guys get it, turn to, oh, no. Again, speaking of mother-in-laws, I see their point because I have a son and of course I want to be there if my son ever gets married, but I'm also a wife. I'm a partner. And if they want to elope, if Yara wants to elope, then they got to go along with it. Jovi is a grown adult, end of story. And I actually think eloping is kind of romantic. If they want to do it, let them do it. What are you going to see there? A ceremony. It's not going to be all lovey-dovey and perfect because look at your son. He's going to fuck it up. He's going to get wasted. He's going to mess it up and it's going to be that engagement party 2.0, which is why it made it more disturbing when Yara and Jovi decide they're basically going to start with a clean slate and they're going to get married and live happily ever after. No, one date together in one makeup session does not a happy marriage make. And I almost think with those two, especially, seeing them get along is way more disturbing to me than seeing them fight. Oh, God. Let's talk very briefly about Andrew and Amira. Now, we already know that Amira's dad doesn't want her to go to Serbia. Amira's kind of waiting it out to see what Andrew's going to do, what he's going to say. I think she's just waiting for him to fall on his own sword, sort of a thing. But first, we meet this immigration attorney that Andrew found. And of all the background filters this attorney could choose, she chooses one that's like a preschool classroom background. And the entire time, I couldn't even listen to what she was saying because I was so distracted by the fact that the background had like little kids' scissors and all this shit going on. And if you're going to present yourself as a professional and you know it's going to be on TV, get your shit together. Find a plain wall in your house or your office, or pick a plain background. It just drove me nuts. And I thought it was hilarious because, of course, Andrew would pick someone who would choose that background. So this attorney, who was sweet, very vague in a certain way, tells him that Amira could pull this off potentially in Serbia. Basically, it's Amira's fault because she messed up her answer in Mexico. Again, she left it kind of vague because I'm sure she can't promise anyone anything like, yeah, go to Serbia, you'll be totally fine. But this whole conversation allows Andrew to pull one of his most smarmiest attempts to look like a good guy, like he's Amira's biggest supporter. I think we could take her advice, but whatever you want to do, babe, I am here for you 100%. I won't make you feel guilty. I don't know what you're talking about. Now, at this point, I did take a little survey of the people in my house watching this, and my daughter thought he was disgusting and needs to cut his hair. And Dave's only response was, I know for a fact she could find a better guy in France. So I think that sums it up. What we're all thinking, what the hell is she doing with this guy? All right, so Hazel and Tariq, they're still looking for a girlfriend, maybe on that same website I was talking about earlier. And even though they're calling Minty, I'm taking my glasses off. This is stressing me out this much. I know I was supposed to be focusing on them calling Minty and how Hazel felt like crap about it. And of course, Tariq was doing some dirty shit. All that aside, I need to get into his house and clean that kitchen. There are so many things on that counter that need to be purged or put away or eliminated. I want to KonMari the shit out of that house. And it's really not anything against Tariq. He's got a young daughter. It's not a huge place, but we just need to pare it down. You know, when your surroundings around you are chaotic and all your shit is out, that's how you're living as well. It's chaotic, and I just need to get in there, maybe even freshen up the paint a little bit. And I want to do that for Hazel because Tariq may love her, but he's also kind of an asshole. He's making these crazy-eyed looks at Hazel to Minty. Like, Minty would say stuff, and he'd widen his eyes like, oh, cuckoo, I don't know what she's talking about. Yeah, I think we need to take a break because, you know, that one over there, she's getting kind of heated. Fuck you, Tariq. Whatever his motives were, whether for TV or to reach out to get Minty to stir some drama up, I don't like any of it. They just need to stick the two of them, and maybe Hazel just has a girlfriend on the side. Whether it's a sister wife thing or not, figure it out, but it's not with this Minty chick. Now let's talk about Jabella Jabal, Stephanie, and Ryan. It has been 3.5 years plus 48 hours, and Stephanie has just now figured out that Ryan is a goddamn liar. Fuck off and die. Fuck off and die. And then she starts smacking her phone with her hand the same way my mom does, because that's how she thinks her phone, how you need to swipe things, is to take your whole paw and just bang the thing. My God, she is crazy. And I am sure the staff at the resort wants her to fuck off and die because she takes all this garbage, a Mylar balloon, which is not recyclable, and just throws it off on her patio. They're going to have a blast chasing that down in a windstorm, you freaking bitch. She's such a wackadoo. Now, she calls Harris, which we knew about, because she needs a friendly face. A face that we know has been all up in her Michigan, or down her Michigan, lower peninsula, if you know what I'm saying. She calls him up because she's got to get back at Ryan. Point blank, that's it. She's just got to do something dirty because she thinks Ryan did something dirty to her. Now, I guess this is a good point to stop and reevaluate everything we've seen about Stephanie and determine whether it's alcohol or a pill form of medication, or is it something else that she's on that's making her act so weird? Because the way she's walking really looks like one foot in front of the other. Like, she's really concentrating on keeping herself upright and how she's going up and down stairs. I mean, I know when she was walking down, she had heels on and she was being careful, but later even walking up, I don't know if it's pills or alcohol. Either way, it's very concerning because if these cameras weren't here, imagine the situations she has likely gotten herself into before, being a woman on her own in a foreign country who's drunk or high or low, allegedly. That's scary. And that's some bad, bad judgment, which leads to Harris coming over. And when I say come over, I mean he traveled like 6 days and nights and hours to get there. And when he gets there, she's like, "Oh, I'm so grateful you're here, Harris, because Ryan just, he did exactly what he told me he was gonna do. I'm so lucky for you, Rye. I mean, Harris." Did you guys catch that? She absolutely started calling him Ryan again because she's like nodding off. She was half asleep. I'm shocked that she was going to make it up the stairs. And now she's going to take him to dinner and cocktails because that's what the all-inclusive has there. And she just needs someone to fill in that spot where Ryan was. She's crazy. Absolutely nuts. So we'll see what happens next week. It looks like he shoots her down. So now I'm wondering, is Harris in cahoots with Ryan to get back at her for what he did or what she did to Ryan? Are you following me here? I know this is like a high school saga because Stephanie, despite the fact that she's, what, 52, acts like she's 16. Okay, let's jump into some sister wives. I'm so excited. I miss this show so much. And even though nothing happens every single week, I love it and I can't get enough of it. And guess who's back? Mariah. Yes. Now, little history lesson with Mariah here. I used to think Mariah was like a spoiled little bitch because remember when she had to have her private school college, she was going to be an MD. So she's got to go to certain colleges while everyone else had to go to UNLV, apply for scholarships and go to community colleges. Mariah got to tour all the expensive colleges she wants because, you know, Mary only has one child. But then Mariah turned a little bit and she started becoming very likable. She definitely won me over when she came out and called Mary out on the fact that Mary made her coming out as a lesbian all about her, that she didn't tell her mom first, and that Mariah was taking her future wedding and grandbaby planning away from her mom. Oh, she's a terrible person. And then also the fact that Mariah knew Mary was filleting a banana and emotionally cheating on her dad with a catfisher, and she didn't fall prey for Mary's pity party. She wanted none of it. And that's the era of Mariah that I loved. However, she's once again annoying the shit out of me. I don't know if I'm the only one. Maybe everyone is still loving Mariah, thinking of her when she came out in Las Vegas. And maybe it's the LuLaRoe shilling, now that I'm thinking about it, because she and Audrey started shilling LuLaRoe when they were in Chicago. Or maybe it's shoving Audrey in our face. I don't know what it is exactly, but Mariah is annoying the shit out of me. Audrey definitely annoys me more. She always has, because I feel like Audrey wants to make Audrey happen. She's trying to make us accept her as a brown child, where brown meaning their last name. I just realized that sounded really weird. But, you know, an Aspen or a Dayton, you are not. Audrey is never going to happen for me. It's not about you, Audrey. It is about us, the viewers, never allowing Mary to live down that wet bar. So just zippy lippy, go move to Utah, and please don't ever make a guest appearance again. And so help me, if they give us a 7-episode arc of Mariah and Audrey moving from Chicago to Utah, ugh, neither of those places we're going to see truly pretending she's four, so we're not going to buy it. We're not watching this. You guys better boycott this with me. I will not. Now, the last thing I have to say about Mariah is just thank God she told Mary before everyone else, because Mary pouting and being angry and that grimace on her face, had she been with everyone else when they found out, would have made the rest of the season certainly unbearable at the least. Now, moving on, we find out that Christine's house in Vegas finally sold. So, alas, we're at Coyote Pass. Do they or do they not build homes there? Like, oh my God, how many times have we gone over this? Cody has a new angle, which he throws out there and then quickly tells us, oh, I actually don't mean any of this. This is all full of shit. Just like that jumbo house he wanted to build where they're all going to live. He throws out this idea that they're going to be developers and they're going to build a whole subdivision there. Throughout all of these suggestions, we have Janelle and Christine talking seriously about building. You know, do we get an architect to give us ideas, X, Y, Z? Mary's just sitting there pouting because no one asked me my opinion. And Robin is sitting there making these serious faces like, I'm just not going to say anything. Nope, don't do it, Robin. Because Robin always has to twist things and manipulate things in other ways. We know, as Cody tells us later, Robin's the family peacekeeper or the peacemaker, but really, she just has the right way to spin things where she looks like she means the best for everyone, but she actually gets her way, like pretending she didn't want to buy or rent the house that they're in, which was this gorgeous home that her kids love. They think it's their dream home. But if she pretends she doesn't want it and that she's praying to God about it, then Cody's going to try harder to please her. It's weird. It's manipulative, but I guess they all are. I guess you have to be if you're four women married to one man. Which leads us back to this whole thing about Robin being the family peacemaker. And actually, the title of the episode was Robin the Peacemaker. Oh, wow. How clever. So Robin calls Cody and Mary out to Coyote Pass to figure out what this whole argument that we saw last season was about. And I still don't totally understand what happened there. It was like a he said, she told me, whatever, it's confusing. I never understood it and I never will. But according to Cody, he doesn't really care what Mary wants. He's tried to please her and he's done. He's given up on it. They're, what did he call it? Distant, amicable friends. Yikes. And for all our years of marriage, Mary was unloading a burden on me that I was expected to handle, but I'm not doing that anymore. There's no reason for me to. And that he won't even put his energy towards Mary because he has three other marriages that are wholesome. Let's talk about this here. Why might you call your marriages to other people wholesome? They're all religious. They're all equally religious. They all buy to your Church of Cody thing, right? So what would that wholesomeness mean? It doesn't mean dressing a certain way because they all wear the same ugly shit. Would it possibly mean wholesome as in one partner, as in didn't cheat on me, talking to a catfisher and make plans to leave the marriage? Yeah, I think so. That's absolutely Cody's way of throwing the truth out there. Only the most expert of sister wife expert watchers like all of us picked up on it. And for that, I say a thank you, Cody. I'm really liking him this season. I mean, he's weird and he's annoying, but I like a very honest Cody. So where are we now? Oh, right. Okay. So they're still on the land. They're trying to figure out what the problem is. Who said what? The goddamn trees. Trees this, trees that. No one wants a house in the trees. Why did no one make a little plot of survey before you bought the damn place to figure out where you could actually put the houses? And let's not even talk about that stupid pond that is not a pond. I've talked about this before. I'm not going to go back into it because I went real deep on that topography of the land, building homes. I want to say those episodes were back in March of last year, which would be in like the 128, 130 episode number range. Go back and listen, because I'm telling you, that is not a freaking goddamn pond in that place. Anyway, while they're there, the three of them, we all hear Mary say she likes that plot of land, but she doesn't want her house up in the trees. She wants it further down so it can back up and she can have a little dock or a porch or something on the pond. But Cody shares with all of us that no one in the family wants to say this to Mary, but none of them want her to have access to the pond or most of it or have the pond on her land because they know she's going to be a real bitch about it. Remember, Mary has a history of being not the nicest to the other kids that are not her own. Maddie called her out on it, and I want to say one of Christine's kids did too. Anyway, they all know that Mary's going to make it seem like it's her pond, or she'll be extra nitpicky if the kids are jumping in the wrong time of day or if they leave their shit out. So no one wants her to have it, but no one's going to say it to her. So here we are seeing all of this, right? And we know Mary, in the end, is going to do what she always has done. And Cody knows this, too. Mary wants to play it both ways. She wants to get her way, but also play the victim who got screwed. And we all love watching this because we're on to her. I love a bitter and annoyed Cody because he gets real honest and bitchy about it, like I said. But I want his receipts. I want to know what he knows. I want my hands on Nancy's session notes, and I want to know exactly how everything has played out and what we can find out about Mary that's going to let us know how things will play out. Because I think Mary doesn't know how she wants to play it at this point. Does she take, now I'm getting way far into the stupid land thing. Does she take the plot with the trees, build her house up in the trees? And then in her mind, yeah, she loses because she doesn't like that area, but she wins because she can bitch about it for the rest of her life. Or does she take another plot of land and not like it and bitch about it there, but she actually does like it because then she wins in the land aspect? The mind fuck she puts us all in. Oh, I can't wait. And I can't wait for that split. Like, it's inevitable. Once this show is canceled for good, she is so out of there. And she'll probably go live in her little bed and breakfast that is not a bed and breakfast. Again, go look back at previous episodes, that same time era. I may or may not have found her mortgage things saying that it's not actually a commercial property. But, you know, I mean, that's for you to go and search those public records as well. Now, that leads me to a public record of some sort. I don't know. I'm trying to make a transition here. It's time for this week's Would You Rather. This was a very easy one for me to create or think of this week. Not as easy to answer, and I am still undecided. I'll let you know when I do decide. Would you rather Ryan or Harris? All right. Make sure you check out the show notes for our links to Patreon. Next week, I'll be back with more Married at First Sight, 90 Day Fiancé, and Sister Wives. Until then, take care of yourself, wear a damn mask, and stay salty.